Welcome to In the News. I'm Chris and Jeff Watson. Today I'll be reading from the AARP magazine. First article is entitled, One Woman's Search for Happiness. Mary Floundering Gives Way to Flourishing After Applying Some Practical Research-Tested Midlife Interventions. Editors know, according to a 2024 report, while older Americans are happier than younger generations, even their happiness has dropped off since the report a dozen years ago. AARP has always pledged to help you find meaning in enjoying your life. And to that end, we offer you Mary's Journal to Happiness. Mary is fictitious only in the sense that she is a composite of older Americans, and all the advice dispensed on her journey is based on hard science and facts, a smart guide to easing your way into the days to come. Chapter 1, Mary's Struggle. Mary Gonzalez Lewis, 60, sits in her home on a stormy day, feeling like so many of us, fed up with miserable headlines, worried about what's coming next, and worried if she'll have enough money to get by without needing to lean on family or white knuckle it alone. Isn't it supposed to be the happiest time of my life? This roof has as many holes as my retirement plan, she says. It's not easy being a parent, even with a grown-up kid. Heather would be over the moon, but God, so are these prices, to Taylor Swift. Then again, when was the last time I treated myself to anything? Work stress isn't helping her sense of contentment and ease. I can't keep working for this idiot boss forever. And now a health scare. Wait, are you kidding me? Right now? Mary arrives at her cousin's Candace office. She knows how important relationships are, and that expressing yourself is better than suffering in silence, even though being vulnerable can be really challenging. Dr. Candace Rosales, psychotherapist. Oh, cousin, thank you for seeing me. I don't know where else to turn. Mary, the stress you're feeling is completely valid, and it's important to acknowledge it. Now let's talk about some practical techniques that can help you find a bit of calm. First, breathe. Think 4, 7, 8. In for 4 seconds, hold it for 7 seconds, exhale for 8 seconds, then repeat it. Also, progressive muscle relaxation can be very helpful. You tense various muscle groups one at a time as you breathe in, then relax them as you breathe out. It can release a lot of the tension you're carrying. Living your best life after 50. Remember, you now have some tools to help you feel better, but it starts with being kind to yourself. You're truly a lifesaver, cousin. Chapter 3 is Mary's Midlife Emergency Kit. A week later, Mary visits her best friend, Elsa, who is eager to hear about the new habits of mind and behavior that Mary is putting into place in her life. My cousin told me to write down 3 funny things I notice every day. Since that simple practice seems to work for some people, or so she says. Hi, Mary. I'm Dr. Nadelman. Who knew you could find anything funny about getting a biopsy from Dr. Needleman? I even laughed about my stupid boss. You're gonna do great. This sales presentation is super important. Hold my calls. Let's go, Elsa. I read that exercise isn't just for Heather's age. Anything to get the body moving can really help with stress. And it's working a bit, I think. Oh, look at that butterfly. Oh, this is better, Elsa. There's even a name for it, savoring. Don't make fun of me, you dork. People in the research study who took note of positive things on a daily 20-minute walk felt significantly happier after just 1 week. That evening, Mary is still eager to grow and learn. I always love your place, Elsa. I wish my space could feel like yours. Can I live like a Higgy? It's not hard. That's Danish for prioritizing life's good and simple pleasures. Soft lighting, cozy blankets, this sunset, quality time with friends like you. Chapter 4, Simple Fixes, Big Payoffs. 2 weeks have passed and Mary is embracing Hygge, that's H-Y-G-G-E, at home. A fuzzy blanket, a few candles, some pretty curtains on the windows. It feels like a new space. Wow, small changes really can make a difference. Those happiness tips really work. Taylor Swift, pick experiences over stuff. She bought them. Back at the doctor's office. Fascinating. Happiness researchers say that 5 acts of kindness on a single day, once per week, for 6 weeks, deliver increased happiness over that period. Why not stop and do that today? She's walking home. If you want love and abundance in your life, give it away. That is from Mark Twain. She's helping a homeless person. She gave Taylor Swift tickets to her daughter. Go out and seek financial and health advice. Mary, determined and proactive, visits a financial planner for the first time in her life. And why not? Research suggests that people typically regret the things they don't do more than the things they did. No FOMO for her, fear of missing out. A budget is telling your money where to go instead of wondering where it went. Honestly, I hate thinking about money in budgeting, but I know I can't keep ignoring it. I put this off for so long, but getting clarity on my finances gives me peace of mind. Tip: Americans with more detailed financial plan are about 3 times as likely to report greater happiness in money matters, including goal setting, debt, net worth, and financial allies. Tax aid. Let's maximize your retirement plan contributions. At age 50 or older, you can make catch-up contributions to retirement accounts such as 401ks and IRAs. For 2024, the limit of these contributions have substantially increased. Asking for help is not a sign of weakness, but a confident gesture of strength. The next day, she's back at Dr. Needleman's with Heather, her daughter. You're going to be okay. I'm going to be okay. A few months into her self-improvement journey, Mary reflects on the sources of her newfound well-being. Nurturing relationships, expressing herself, contributing to the well-being of others, embracing opportunities with a yes, experimenting with a new experience, and cherishing the positive. Making connections helps change your life. Sorry, she tells her boss, I don't work on weekends anymore. I'll never forget this, Mama, at the Taylor Swift. Me neither, baby. Imagine your ideal future. Hold that vision and take steps towards it every day. Flourishing isn't a destination, but a way of being. Life is good if you allow it to be. The Big 5-0. Derek Jeter, June 26. He may have retired from the New York Yankees in 2014, but the 5-time World Series champ has stayed busy off the diamond. Jeter created the Turn 2 Foundation in 1996. The organization supports programs that help kids avoid alcohol and drugs. A real gamer. Jeter led the Miami Marlins as CEO from 2017 to 2022. He has also been part of a trading card business, arena club, and a sportswear brand, Greatness Wins. As seen on TV, while a player, Jeter appeared on Seinfeld and Saturday Night Live. In 2022, ESPN premiered The Captain, a bio series. Jeter's also a baseball analyst on Fox. Headed for home, Jeter and his wife Hannah live in Florida with their 4 young children. Words to live by. Being happy is winning, Jeter told GQ. I want to be happy. More celebrity birth dates. Alanis Morissette, June 1st, turns 50. Singing of Inc's Anthems is touring alongside Joan Jett and the Black Hearts. Donald Faison, former Scrub star, plays the Boston Celtics owner on a sitcom Extended Family. He's 50. David Spade, 60 he turns. Ex-SNL actor hosts the podcast Flying the Wall with SNL alum Dana Carvey. Sandra Bullock turned 60 on July 26th. Oscar winner also owns Austin, Texas cafe and flower shop, Walton's Fancy and Stable. Also 60, Vivian A. Fox, actor, made her directorial debut with First Lady of BMF, the Tanisha Welch story. 70, Sonia Sotomayor, Supreme Court Justice, appear on children's animated series Alma's Way. Jon Bon Jovi's Long Journey Back. How the kid phenom of Jersey rock has handled 40 years of fame and the potential loss of his most precious instrument, his voice. In the spring of 2022, Jon Bon Jovi led his band on what they hoped would be a triumphant return to live performing after a two-year pandemic break. They had booked a 15-city U.S. tour. By the third or fourth show, however, critics were asking, what's going on with Jon Bon Jovi's voice? Known for the power, range, and precision of his hard rock belting on hits like Living on a Prayer and Wanted Dead or Alive, on this tour, the singer was often flat and reedy. The band's longtime keyboardist, David Bryan, who's been playing with Bon Jovi since they were 16, said, something was wrong. It was scary as hell for all of us and for him. Legendary-driven, Bon Jovi pushed on with the tour, but after a show in Nashville, he came off stage and his wife, Dorothea, told him flat out, it wasn't great. John and Dorothea have been met and started dating in high school. They married in 1989 and have been together ever since, a remarkable feat in the music business. He knew he might be staring down the barrel of retirement, the end of a career he had worked extremely hard to build. It was a fate he could not accept. That June, Bon Jovi underwent surgery on his throat, which gave him and his band considerable hope. Since then, they have recorded a new LP, Forever, their 16th studio album, released this June during the band's 40th anniversary year. But when, or even whether, Bon Jovi's voice can withstand the rigors of another multi-city arena tour remains up in the air. His doctor is hopeful. Dorothea knows that her husband has the grit to confront the challenge, as she makes clear in a new four-part Hulu documentary titled Thank You, Good Night, The Bon Jovi Story, which chronicles not only the band's rise to fame, but John's vocal struggles. He's used to controlling everything, Dorothea says. I always say, by sheer will, he will make it happen. I met with Bon Jovi in late February, a few days before his 62nd birthday. He greeted me in the kitchen of his home, a French chateau-style house in New Jersey, as he prepared us some tea with ginger honey. My crack, he said, flashing his billion-watt smile. He immediately off-footed me with an unexpected show of modesty. I complimented him on more than 1 billion Spotify streams of Living on a Prayer, and he waved away the praise, saying, Taylor Swift and The Weeknd regularly rack up more. For all his diplomacy, Bon Jovi holds his own in such company with worldwide record sales of 130 million. We sat in his personal office, which was crammed with memorabilia and musical instruments, dressed in pale blue t-shirt. In faded jeans, he looked fit and healthy. He has allowed his hair to go gray, and he once teen beat pretty face is all the more handsome for its smiles, lines, and wrinkles. His speaking voice is grainier than it used to be, and he's careful with it. There's an awful lot riding on those vocal cords. Bon Jovi's struggle has perhaps been particularly hard on a man who, by his own admission, has been extraordinarily lucky. He was born John Bongiovi in 1962, the eldest of three sons, and raised in the modest suburban community of Sayreville, New Jersey. His dad, a hairdresser, mom a florist, had met in the Marines, and they encouraged his rock and roll dreams from the start. They were like, "You can do this," he recalls, and you believed it. At 16, he formed his band, the Atlantic City Expressway, and they landed a regular gig at the Fast Lane, a bar on the Jersey Shore, where his heroes Bruce Springsteen and Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes cut their teeth. He jumps up and shows me a photo of the band matching satin tour jackets. "Look at those jackets," he laughs with irony and nostalgia, emulating Southside Johnny. Skipping college, there was no plan B, he said. He was working as a gopher at a Manhattan recording studio when he wrote Runaway, his wide-eyed response to the teenage streetwalkers who thronged the Port Authority bus terminal on his commute into the city. Recorded after hours at the studio, the single was picked up by a local radio station, and it was soon being requested at affiliate stations across the country. Record labels scrambled to see the band live, but there was no band. Bon Jovi reached out to acquaintances that included a guitarist and songwriter named Richie Sambora for what all of them assumed would be a short promo tour. It would extend for four decades. In 1983, he signed with the Mercury label of Polygram Records, which suggested a name change from Bongiovi to Bon Jovi because it looked like Van Halen. After releasing two passable albums, songwriters Bon Jovi and Sambora sought fresh inspiration from pro Desmond Child, who pushed the pair to extend their themes beyond hot girls and cars to tell actual stories. The trio pumped out You Give Love a Bad Name and Living on a Prayer, irresistible long mega anthems that powered the band's third LP, Slippery When Wet, to number one on the album charts. Global arena tours ensued. Asked about the moment when he first realized, "Wait, I'm an actual rock star," Bon Jovi shakes his head. "You always say you're a rock star. I played in that club in that satin jacket and thought I was a rock star." Many of the songs Bon Jovi writes are strictly inspirational, with soaring choruses, songs about the underdog prevailing, the long shot triumph, the star-crossed lovers who defeat the odds. And then there are songs like Bed of Roses, off the band's fifth LP, Keep the Faith, in 1992, which hits at temptations of living out of lonely hotel rooms on the road. It includes the lyrics, "'Cause a bottle of vodka's still lodged in my hand, and some blonde gave me a nightmare. Think that she's still in my bed." He and Dorothina were married when he wrote those words, which begged a nosy journalistic question. Those lyrics, "Bed of Roses," I start to say delicately, are very honest, he cut me off. "I don't hide behind anything. I never lied to my wife's face. We were 18 when we met and started dating. Life has happened." Keep the Faith was released at the height of the gloom-laden grunge movement led by Nirvana, Pearl Jam, and Soundgarden, a style of indie rock music that made big commercial pop bands like Bon Jovi obsolete overnight. Many of Bon Jovi's contemporaries, then in their 30s, adopted the look, sound, and attitude of grunge. "I watched my peer group suddenly buy flannel shirts and run to that," Bon Jovi recalls. "I said, that's a big mistake. Why would you change that?" I realized. "But you are. Tell the truth." The band survived and was still charting in 2013 with its 12th studio album, What About Now, instantly went to number one and spawned the year's top grossing tour. But there were problems brewing, problems that will ultimately end up impacting Jon Bon Jovi's voice. Sambora, who had been in and out of rehab over the previous decade, quit the band suddenly during the first leg of the tour. Together, Bon Jovi and Cimbora had been a powerful vocal team. Bon Jovi found himself singing for two. For the rest of the show, he recalls, some 80 dates. It was after that when everything started to go south, he says. I couldn't figure it out. Was it psychological? Was it physical? He was especially mystified because he had, since his teens, always taken assiduous care of his voice, performing not only warm-ups before concerts, but also cool-down exercises after shows. He had long stayed away from drugs and smoking, in part to preserve his voice. But after the 2013 tour, an increasing breathlessness, diminished volume, and moments of uncertainty pitch made singing increasingly fraught for Bon Jovi. He got through tours from 2000 to 2019, but upon his return to performing after the pandemic break, he discovered that his voice had further deteriorated to the point where Dorthena had to speak to him. Rockstar versus aging. Singing is a mysterious activity. It has mystical connection to the deepest part of ourselves as individuals and as a species. For a book I wrote in 2021, This is the Voice, I spoke with Julie Anders about the botched vocal cord surgery that destroyed her singing voice. Singing, she said, had afforded her an ecstasy that was unbelievable for her to think will never come my way again. Another former singer, an opera tenor, forced to retire because of vocal cord scarring, told me, when you sing, you're giving your voice to your soul. For Bon Jovi, the potential loss was devastating. People had to talk me off the ledge, he says, because you're like, I didn't do anything wrong. What's wrong? Lip-syncing to a pre-recorded vocal track in a concert was out of the question for him. So was relying on auto-tune, a digital technology that can tweak voices to perfect pitch in live performances. I'd rather get hit by a bus. It was not until he spoke with singer Shania Twain, who detailed how she overcame her own voice problems in the February-March 2020 issue of this magazine, that he found hope. Bon Jovi consulted Twain's voice doctor, Robert Sokoloff, a leading voice surgeon in Philadelphia. The doctor was struck by the care Bon Jovi had taken care of his voice. John has worked throughout his career harder or more diligently than most of his fans would ever have guessed, the doctor said. But now Bon Jovi was facing something he could not control, even though hard work alone, the natural aging process. Eventually, it catches up with all of us. Despite the overwork on his 2013 tour, there's no specific vocal injury that Bon Jovi suffered, no disease or illness. His voice problem is mainly the result of aging. And like all aspects of aging, some people are more susceptible to vocal problems than others. Over time, Bon Jovi began to experience the thinning of his vocal cords, or as they are properly called, vocal folds. Bands of tissue composed of muscle. When singing or talking, we produce high sounds by bringing our vocal cords together. Lessons from a effing battle. Along with his voice struggles, Bon Jovi has faced the quandary of how to age gracefully in a young person's game. In this, he has some help from his friends, have set inspiring examples. Springsteen's 13 years older than Bon Jovi and a lifelong mentor, has never sacrificed his integrity as a musician. The two take regular drives together to talk. Another is Paul McCartney, who has, to Bon Jovi's delight and astonishment, become a close friend. The Rockers showed me a recent photo of two of them eating and talking animated at a picnic table on Bon Jovi's property in East Hampton, New York. We do this all summer, he says, his tone tinged with disbelief. I go to his beach house, and our wives are very close. What most impresses him about Paul is the enthusiasm and love of songwriting that the Beatles still possessed. He slips into an imitation of McCarthy's Liverpool accent and childlike enthusiasm. "Oh, I've got new stuff," he tells me at 81. Crazy. Bon Jovi may well keep writing into his 80s, too, because he has seen how aging has deepened his songwriting. "I have a bigger palette to write from," he says, "more life experience. I think that every record reflects someone who I am at that time. The band's last studio, 2020, covered tough subjects like COVID, school shootings, and the killing of George Floyd. It was overlooked by critics, perhaps because the band could not tour to promote it. Still, I think it's one of my better records," Bon Jovi said. "The new record, by contrast," he says, "is about joy. Although the first song you wrote for the album is one to my ear sounds uncharacteristically despairing, Hollow Man, sung in low rumble, has brooding lyrics about a man bereaved of inspiration." Bon Jovi casts an entirely different light on it, one that reflects his spirituality. "The song," he says, "is an appeal to God. It says, fill me up. I'm a vessel. What do I want to say and how can I say it?" Another song on the album, Kiss the Bride, also reckons with age and change, dealing as it does with how parenthood makes us aware of the passage of time. He and his wife have four children, three sons and a daughter, ranging in age from 20 to 31. Kiss the Bride is about giving away their daughter at her wedding and stepping aside. Cried writing it and cried recording it, he says. "It's the whole album about aging," I ask. "Most definitely," he says. "Don't try to be what you used to be. I don't want to be the kid from Slippery When Wet. I have no desire to be that kid." When Bon Jovi wants to be who he has become, who he has by force turned himself into, he points to the album's opening track, Legendary. The lyrics evoke the audacity of his dream of escaping his blue-collar beginnings. Bon Jovi has debuted his post-surgery voice in live performance just a few weeks before our meeting, when he was honored by Music Cares at an annual event in L.A. that acknowledges the help that musicians give. For 13 years, Bon Jovi's Soul Foundation has run JBJ Soul Kitchen, a restaurant for paying customers and those who can't afford to pay, with four New Jersey locations. The best thing to come out of the Music Cares event for him was the silencing of thoughts. When he was on stage, he tells me, doubt wasn't there. Fear wasn't there. It was just the old me. And even if he has no desire to be his old young self, he wasn't sorry to catch a fleeting glimpse of that long lost kid. "Oh, I like seeing him," he said. "It was very good." Well, that's all the time we have for today. I've been reading from the AARP magazine. I'm Jeff Watson. So long until next time.